It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Wednesday. Hope you're having a great start to your day. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, of course, is on the ones and twos as always. JoJo, what's shaking? Looking nice today.
Thank you. It's also hump day. So make sure you get that out of the way real quick.
I think that's trademarked, isn't it?
I think it is, but if they're not listening, they don't know that it's being stolen. I think he's on TV right now, and the last thing on his mind is two yokels stealing his Wednesday catchphrase. I don't think he cares.
Listening. That is the theme of the day.
But wouldn't it be something, though, if you did listen and it got out that Leland Statham beat you up for stealing his hump day? It'd be the greatest beatdown ever.
Let's just be honest. He'd beat you up. You'd be the one he's coming after.
Yeah, that's right. So. But, hey, it's a badge of honor. What happened to you? Leland Statham kicked my ass. So, other than that, why? Long story.
I stole his hump day.
Oh, now you're done.
Yeah, we're both done.
He's coming after you now.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. The Stanley Cup final is done. The Florida Panthers are back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. And, look, that's a wagon, as the kids say. I mean, that is just a really talented hockey team. And there are probably 28 teams that aren't even close to that, 29 teams that aren't even close to that right now. And then the ones that are obviously far, far off, because Edmonton's a good team too, and Florida just took care of them in six games. So congratulations to the Panthers, and we'll see if they can keep all those guys and go for a three-peat.
Good for them. You know, winning one's great. Winning two, man, that's a feat. And so good for the Panthers. And I think, you know, the three-peat, you know, we talk about in football, it's never happened in the modern-day era. It's never happened. And then with when's that baseball? Was it the Yankees, 98?
I think the Yankees are the last to do that,
99 and 2000 did it.
Yep.
And then NBA, I know the Bulls did it in 96 or 98. Somebody might have done it after that. Lakers did it, right, maybe?
Lakers have done it twice.
Okay, yeah.
I think
then I remember Pat Riley.
The Bulls have done it twice.
Pat Riley trademarked three-peat back in the mid-80s for the Lakers and did all that. So every time you say three-peat, I guess he gets money.
Dr. Green, did Kobe have two three-peats?
I'll have to double-check on that.
Or was it one and then he won back-to-back? I can't remember.
It might have been one three-peat and then back-to-back. That sounds a little bit more accurate to me.
Well, we know the Bulls did, but my question to you is, and our friend Ricky asked me this last night, my answer is no, but and we'll get to your countdown in a second, but are they a dynasty? I mean, they've gone to three straight Stanley Cup finals. They've won two of them. No. I'm going to say no. I think you got to win three championships to be a dynasty, but pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's why, you know, the Buffalo Bills are not a dynasty. The Minnesota Vikings were not a dynasty. You got to win. I mean, you got to win those games. And so, but Bills never did it. So if Florida would have won it in 23? Yeah, they're a dynasty. But nah, two, you're just really good. You win next year, yeah, you're a dynasty.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, go ahead.
All right, here it is. Dr. Crane? Yeah, we are today officially 66 days out. 66 days out from the start of the college football season. Praise the Lord. 66 days out, so we've been doing this countdown. Who is your all-time favorite number 66? Let us know. 615-737-1025. Call or text. Let us know. Chaser, who is your number? Who's your favorite 66?
I'll go Mario Lemieux.
Oh, he's 60. Was he not 68 too?
No, that was Yager.
Yager, okay. 66. Dr. Crane.
Super Mario.
You got a famous one you want to get out?
No. All these high 60 numbers, they're not good for me.
Wasn't Alan Faneca number 66?
I don't remember right now. I don't. Was he? Or 68, maybe?
Rick Ankiel wore it in baseball.
Okay, yeah. Oh, Rick Ankiel, boy, he was a troubled young man. My favorite is the nastiest, dirtiest lineman of all time that ever played in the football, Conrad Dobler, number 66, played for the Cardinals. You talk about mean. These guys today have no idea what mean is until you watch Conrad Dobler. And that's what offensive – that's what the Titans – if the Titans had four Conrad Doblers on the offensive line out of five, they'd be – any team, if you had – you don't know who Conrad Dobler is, look him up. Probably the nastiest, meanest football player of all time. Number 66.
Okay.
Passed away 2 years ago. Oh, man. So there you go. Yeah, 66 is a tough number, like Dr. Crane said.
Well, don't forget, you know, you can root 66. So the United States, you know, can be in this conversation.
Oh, man. Root 66.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
I'm saying
Frank ass.
There's got to be some more, too, as well. Internet's not my friend this morning, so we're having a little argument together.
No one's my friend. It's okay.
Ray Nitschke was 66 for the Green Bay Packers. One of the greatest linemen of all. He was also mean as a snake, too. And Joe Jacoby for the Redskins. See, we're in the numbers now where people don't care about these guys when we should, because all we care about are, you know, the guys who score the touchdowns. But these are guys, man, that just we should really pay more attention to because they're legends. Yeah, Alan Faneca wore 66. Nitschke, Billy Shaw, who was the only AFL player in the NFL Hall of Fame out of Georgia Tech, played with the Bills. Great, great lineman. Is in there as well. So, famous number 66, the number that a lot of people don't care about, and you should.
Yes, indeed. So, you can keep that coming on the text line, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonKennyHyundai.com. John McClain going to join us, as he always does, at 9:30. And also, coming up just before that, a little NASCAR flavor, Todd Gilliland, driver of the number 34, is going to join us. And also a little news coming out with NASCAR this morning that they are finalizing a deal with the city of San Diego to have a street race there starting next year.
San Diego. Do you know what San Diego means?
It means something with a whale.
That's good. Are you a fan of NASCAR street races?
Not really. I think Chicago hadn't been... I mean, it's okay, but it's rained both years and... I don't know. I mean, it was cool here with the IndyCar, but it's such an expensive endeavor, and I don't know. I mean, it's just they keep doing it, so obviously they like something with it, but they want to be back in Southern California. You know, the Auto Club Speedway, which I thought was a great speedway, is now pretty much demolished. The front stretch is all that remains, and supposedly they were going to turn that into a short track. I don't think that's going to happen. They did the Clash at the Coliseum exhibition race, and so now they want to try a street course in San Diego. And look, if you're San Diego, you're all for it, because the only thing you got right now are the Padres. So, you know, if you can get a bunch of NASCAR fans out to your city and, you know, get the world to view things from there, then why not try it?
I'm with you. I just like NASCAR to me is Talladega, Daytona, the big tracks, that Bristol, you know, to me, that's it. Street racing, I'm good.
I know. I'm kind of the same way, and I think they raced to Mexico City, which we're going to ask Todd about here in a few minutes. They raced to Mexico City last week, which, again, was kind of cool because there's a part of the track, it's a road course, where they come into a stadium. And so, like, they have the stadium surrounding part of the racetrack, which was pretty cool. But I think the road courses are oversaturated. So I'm just not a fan.
You know what else is oversaturated?
What's that?
Some college football quarterback running his mouth on a podcast and getting a lot of people fired up in June, which I love.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this quite a bit, but Diego Pavia going on a podcast and saying that, what is it, the Dr. Crane, Vanderbilt's going to run this state or something?
Yeah, he wanted Tennessee to be known as Vanderbilt State. Yeah.
All right, here's what I know we're going to play that a little bit later because I want to actually get into this a little bit more, but look, I love it. I love confidence. I love, you know, that he's back, and whether he should be or not, that doesn't matter. He's back now. And I hope that Clark Lee and Vanderbilt have another good year. I hope they build off last year, but I'm going to tell you this. Like I'm a beaten down Vanderbilt fan since birth. I've seen this. Let's just chill. a little bit because they got to go earn it. They haven't earned anything. They haven't earned the ability to go trash talk on podcasts and to poke the bear that is Tennessee. Because, look, Tennessee may take a step back because of the Nico thing. I don't know. I think we're about to truly see how good of a coach Josh Heupel is, and I think he's a pretty damn good coach. I think Clark Lee's a pretty good coach. But let's just pump the brakes a little bit. That's my thing. I'm all about confidence and, you know, what Pavia brings, and he's borderline cocky, and, you know, that's okay. But, you know, saying that this is Vanderbilt State and all that, like, bro, no. Like, they haven't done anything in a long time to claim that in football.
Well, I think Tennessee fans are like, who's this guy?
Right.
Who's this guy talking? A few things. I love it. Run your mouth. But when Tennessee plants you on your ass in late November in Neyland Stadium and they remember this, don't cry dirty hits. Don't cry, oh, no, look at that. No, man. Run your mouth. That's fine. Run your mouth. Go on whatever show you want to. Run your mouth. Do all that. That's fine. But no. But here's my thing. You were bad against Tennessee. I mean, you were down the stretch, Pavia. I'm excluding the bowl game because Georgia Tech was not that good. But LSU, South Carolina, Tennessee figured Odiego out. He was not good down the stretch. The Vols absolutely figured him out. So I get that. If you come on, you're like, hey, I passed for 230, I ran for 180, and I scored 3 touchdowns, and we lost. But Tennessee punished you that day. You didn't do anything. So yeah, keep running your mouth. I'm fine. Guys can run your mouth. But when you're getting hit after the whistle, don't be crying. Don't be crying. You brought this in yourself. But here's the funny thing, Chase. Most of the Tennessee fans I know, they're like, who? San Diego? Who? What do we do? Who's this guy? They don't know who you are. And also, the hierarchy of Tennessee's opponents, is Vanderbilt in the top five? I don't think Vanderbilt ranks in the top five of Tennessee football rivals. I don't.
Well,
I don't think so.
You may be right. I mean, Bama's probably number one.
Florida is right underneath
Florida's
Bama.
Florida's right there. Three. It depends. A long time it was Auburn. I mean, you know,
Georgia is number three.
Oh, yeah, Georgia. And then Auburn maybe still is in there, but probably not.
Yeah, so Vanderbilt.
Kentucky,
they want to be Kentucky and Vanderbilt.
I would make a case for Vandy being at four.
I'm going to go five at best. You know, remember, for me growing up, Vanderbilt was a victory lap for the Vols for many years.
Well, I mean, it was like that for me, too.
I didn't see
Vanderbilt beat Tennessee until 2005.
That's right. It's from 82 to 2005, Vanderbilt. And they had chances along the way to win those games. And they did. You know, there's only one coach in Vanderbilt history who's beaten Tennessee, beaten three different head football coaches at Tennessee. Do you know that? Only one Vanderbilt coach has beaten three different head coaches.
Is that Derek Mason?
That's Derek Mason. Can you name him?
Butch.
Butchie.
Brady Hoke.
Attaboy. One more.
And
bring it home.
Who is the
McDonald's bag, baby?
Oh, Pruitt.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Yep. So, but again, I mean, Pavia can run his. I love it. I mean, run your mouth and talk to smack. It's great, man. It's mid-June. We need this. All that. And it's something that we could talk about. I mean, it's fun, right?
Oh,
I get it. But still, at the same time, we'll play clips from Pavia in the 10 o'clock hour.
We'll do a deep dive into this a little bit later. Coming up next, though, we'll talk a little racing, get his thoughts on Mexico and potentially San Diego as well. Todd Gilliland, a NASCAR driver, is going to join us here on the program as we're going to be a little all over the place today, but that's how we like it. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. It's the Chase and Big Joe Show, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, here on this Wednesday. Of course, join me tonight at 6 for Chasing Checkers, talk about NASCAR and everything going on in the racing world. And as we do that, we'll do that on this show as well. Bringing the driver of the number 34 for Front Row Motorsports, Todd Gilliland, is on the line with us. And Joe, you may remember we talked to Todd last year on the morning of the Daytona 500 when they ran it on Monday. He was nice enough to come on our show. Todd, welcome back.
Yeah, awesome. It's definitely great to talk to you guys again.
Mexico City was kind of a wild ride for you early in that race, but you made it through that wreck. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was definitely a wild ride. I think, kind of all weekend we showed really good speed throughout practice, qualifying, and we weren't great when the race started, for sure. So we were just kind of hanging around, kind of where we started, for that first stage, and very lucky to have missed that wreck. I don't, sometimes I feel like the driver makes a little bit of difference, but I had no clue what was going on, and I just saw every single person that was around just slide off in front of me. So worked out perfect for us, but I got really lucky there, and same thing kind of carried on. We weren't great the rest of the race, but overall definitely could have been worse if we got caught up in that wreck.
Did you go get a lottery ticket when you got back? I mean, that's how lucky that was for you to get through that.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't get a lottery ticket. I think it could go either way. I hope I didn't use up all my luck for the whole season right there. But hopefully it's like what you're saying, that the luck is just going to continue on. I like that much better.
What was the atmosphere like? I thought it was cool. You guys like running through a stadium essentially is what it was. I mean, it definitely seemed like the fans were into it, but first time with the Cup Series in Mexico City, what was that like?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think the excitement level, like you mentioned, is it was pretty much like anything I've never seen before. So, we went out to the fan zone. We're getting absolutely mobbed with people, which was a lot of fun. Just to see the excitement, the energy behind it all was great. So, the racetrack itself is really nice. We had great accommodations when we were there. We had great food, and like I said, the racetrack raced really well for our Cup Series cars. And the stadium section for sure was, again, like nothing I've ever seen. So, a lot of firsts, and it's still really fun and exciting that, with all the travel, all the different things that it takes to get down there, that NASCAR can still put on our normal great show, right? It seems like any racetrack. So I think that says a lot about, the state of NASCAR right now. And it's a lot of fun to be a part of it.
Todd, you have 6 top 15 runs this year. What's the line between doing really, really well and like finishing 38th? I got to think it's a small one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very small. It doesn't take much, especially in the next gen car and the times that we're in right now in the Cup Series. It's just the margins are razor thin. So you have to have really good pit stops. You have to qualify well to get off to a good start. But there's definitely still cars that drive better than others. So it's still the same old thing of we have to have speed and handling our race car. But nowadays, I think it just makes all the details so much more important because everyone is so close. So, that comes down to no pit road penalties, gaining spots on pit road if possible. Restarts are extremely important because, 90% of the time, I would say, the restarts are where you're going to get your chunk of spots, whether it's, gaining 5 or losing 5. For the next, I would say those spots come in the first 5 laps after a restart. And then the next 50 laps after that, it might take you to get those spots back. So, it's all in the details now, and it's, all, very, very close to, razor-thin margins, I'd say.
I remember one time Darrell Waltrip years ago had said this, and it's been used in other things as well, about racing and sports. He's like, I'd rather be lucky than good any day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like you said, I think that goes for any sport. So, a lot of people say you definitely make your own luck, right? You have to be fast. You have to be, execute well, whether it's all the stuff I was just talking about, resorts, pit road, all that stuff. But, with a little bit of luck, too, it can definitely go a long way.
So you go to Pocono coming up your next race, and we had Ryan Blaney on a few weeks ago, and we're talking about the racing and everything, new tracks. How do you prepare for Pocono? Do you get in the simulator and Pocono is right there for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I would say it's along those same lines of kind of every week's prep, to be honest. I think, a normal week for me is, kind of going to the simulator on a Thursday afternoon where we make, 2 hours worth of laps at, kind of different racetracks, but majority of the time is spent on whatever that next week race is. So, tomorrow we'll be going to the simulator and going to Pocono and running a lot of laps, working on our setup, working on myself, so that we're ready to hit the ground running when we get there.
NASCAR driver Todd Gilliland is on with us. Pocono might be, in my opinion, the most unique track on the circuit. Obviously, it's got three turns. That's what it's most known for, is the tricky triangle. But each straightaway is different. Each turn is different. I know they're mirrored after other tracks. Is that where it really puts it in the driver's hands, that you got to really know what you're doing around this place?
Yeah, I think it's, I'd say maybe the biggest thing is just as a driver, knowing what you're trying to achieve. Because, if you're trying to make it fast in, one corner, maybe there's not as much speed there as other corners. And obviously, you want to be as good as you can through every corner. But like you mentioned, they're just so different. So it's definitely a really challenging race weekend on, drivers, teams, engineers, crew chiefs, all that stuff. So I think in the end, you're going to have to, kind of pick and choose what corners are most important to you. I think naturally some cars will be better through certain areas. So take your strengths, kind of, try and pick out your weaknesses. So, I mean, in the long run, it's kind of the same focus as normal, but definitely this weekend is much tougher. And crew chiefs, engineers trying to, dial in the car to being exactly perfect. I just don't think that's going to be even a thing this weekend, just because the corners are so different.
And then in a couple of weeks, you guys go to the now renamed Echo Park Speedway in Atlanta. I'm curious of that because I when they repaved it and they did the reconfiguration, they kind of set it up like a super speedway, even though it was a mile and a half. Do you feel like it's going away from that and kind of going back to an intermediate?
I think you can certainly see, the potential for that. But I don't think it's there yet. I think there's still a lot of, a lot of downforce to be, built back into the race cars for, the teams. And I think this weekend will certainly be the most, kind of mile and a half field that you've seen in a long time at Echo Park Speedway down there. So, just because of the temperature, it's going to be much hotter, obviously at night. So that kind of cancels out a little bit. But when we were there in February, track was extremely cool and made a lot of grip. So I think you could see some more guys sliding around, and it's still a balance of how much grip you want to build into your car versus how much you want to take off for speed and drag down the straightaway. So I think you'll continue to see it be a super speedway for a while, but definitely the pavement's aging probably quicker than all of us thought. So it could definitely be a place where you're slipping and sliding around before we know it.
Todd, the news is out this morning. It's not official yet, but the rumor is that NASCAR is finalizing a deal with the city of San Diego to do a street course race there in Southern California. And I know Southern California is a big market for the sport. And while it's not official, I mean, how cool would it be to race the streets of San Diego? We've seen it in Chicago with that street race, but how neat would that be?
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I think the biggest thing is kind of getting back into that, Southern California market, right? We went to Auto Club Speedway for a long time, which was a great racetrack, but it's been shut down. And then, we went to the LA Coliseum for a long time, which was awesome. But then we kind of gone a couple of years without going there at all. So I think San Diego would be a great place. Obviously, logistics-wise, NASCAR is getting really good at putting on street races, and I think we can do it pretty flawlessly. So I'm excited about that. And in my opinion, I just at least hope the rumors are true, right? It sounds like fun from my seat.
Yeah, should be fun for sure. Todd, thanks so much for doing this today. Good luck in Pocono. We'll talk to you again soon.
Awesome. Yes, it was great talking to you guys.
Todd Gilliland, driver of the number 34 Front Row Motorsports Ford. And again, they will be racing at the Pocono Raceway, the Great American Getaway 400 presented by visitpa.com. That's coming up on Sunday. And as always, you can hear that starting at noon here on 102.5 The Game.
Jason Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday.
And John McClain.
And now we say hello to John McClain.
He's presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW. That's where we were on Friday when we spent a whole hour with Jeff Fisher, John, right after you. And he was very excited to be able to follow you and had some nice things to say. I know you two obviously were very close.
Yeah, I'll never forget the first time I talked to Jeff was, after the 1993 season. He was coaching with the 49ers, and I was at the Pro Bowl, and their staff was coaching the NFC, and I heard that Buddy Ryan who had been there 1 year as a defensive coordinator in 93 when the Oilers had the best and nastiest and dirtiest defense in the NFL, and they went 12-4 and lost to the Chiefs in the divisional round. But in Joe Montana's last miracle, but I called Floyd and told him I woke him up, told him that I heard he'd given permission for Buddy Ryan to talk to the Cardinals, and he admitted he did. He said, don't attribute it to me. So, and then it dawned on me that the only guy who knew Buddy Ryan's defense in the NFL was right there in the same hotel I was in. So I called Jeff's room, and his wife Julie answered, and I told Julie why I was calling. She said she had him call me, and he did. And I remember, I'll never forget, we had a guy for the Houston Post who had covered the 49ers. And so when Jeff called me, I said, well, I have some information that I think you're going to want to know, but I have to make sure that about coming to the Oilers. And I said, but I got to make sure you're not going to tell Richard. I can't remember his last name now. And he said, well, if you and I are going to work together, you'll know that I'm an honest guy. And what if I give you my word, it's good. And I said, well, that's good enough for me. I said, Buddy, I believe he's going to the Cardinals, and they're going to call you and offer you a job as defensive coordinator. So they hadn't at that time, but they did. And that was how I met Jeff on the phone and soon met him in person. It turned out to be one of the best moves in franchise history, and it was only Floyd's second year as general manager.
Yeah, and I mean, he made the change pretty quick in 94, and as you say, the rest is history. Looking at the current Houston team, NFL.com did a deal of, you know, players that they think can bounce back in 2025. Obviously, C.J. Stroud did not have the same year that he had in his rookie year, but I attribute a lot of that to being sacked 52 times. They've completely redone the offensive line. Do you feel like that Stroud is due for a comeback to be one of the better quarterbacks in the AFC?
I see that around the NFL. People obviously have no clue what they're talking about because they didn't see every team on this, every play of this team. I attribute everything to the offensive line and other pass protectors. Not only was he sacked the second most, and some of those are not the line, some of them are his fault, but he was pressured more than any quarterback. They had a lineman beaten at the snap, at least one lineman beaten at the snap, could be more than any team in the league. So what he was, the pressure he was under, unless you watched every play, you wouldn't know it. And another thing I thought was interesting, I read one of the national things after the season trying to make a case for it not being so much on the line as it was on Stroud because he had X points, he say 3.5 seconds to throw. And I'm thinking, geez, you idiot, that's because he was running around like crazy being chased. And but anyway, could he bounce back and be better? You have to get better protection. But you don't want to have an offensive line. They brought in five, and the crew that they put out on the field during the off-season program, they would have a new left tackle, a new left guard, a new center, a right guard, Titus Howard, who started at left guard last year but has been a regular right tackle, and their right tackle, Blake Fisher, started, I think, five games as a rookie because of injuries. And so I doubt seriously that's going to be the line they put out for their opener at the Rams just because injuries, because guys are going to do better when they put on pads. I love reading things about like Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., who should be one of the best pass rush duos in the league, how many times they beat the offensive linemen in the OTAs. And I'm like, you can't put on pads. You can't hit anybody. What are you talking about? You know, that is so unfair to the offensive linemen. Now, when they put on the pads, they're going to get beat by those two anyway. But so much is put in to the OTAs by media when it doesn't, when you can't put on pads, which is preposterous. But as a long answer, I would think if he is protected better, not so much the sacks, but the constant pressure, yes, he'll have a better season. Last season, there was not a time that he was issued. I think Chris Sims said on his show with Florio this week that I disagree with this totally. He wouldn't be surprised to see the Texans in the Super Bowl. And he said because of the issue was not Stroud, and it was the protection, and it was the coaching. But they still got another first-time play caller in Nick Gailey, who came from the Rams. He's also the first-time coordinator. And their offensive line coach, Cole Popovich, was the backup last year. And for them to elevate him, and they let Kaylee wanted that, and they signed off on it. It meant he didn't get a chance to do a lot last year. I thought they'd get rid of him because of guilt by association, but they showed a lot of confidence in him. And everybody's talking about Kaylee. I said, the most important assistant coach on this team is not Nick Kaylee. It's Cole Popovich, because Kaylee can call the greatest plays in history. But if you can't block up front, it doesn't matter.
Amen to that. John McClain is on the Chase and Big Joe show today. Speaking of the Houston Texans, John, they upset the apple cart. You know where I'm going with this. When they gave Jaden Higgins their second-round pick, the guaranteed contract. Now, only two of 32 second-round picks are unsigned. All eyes are now on the Seahawks because they're next in the pecking order. But, John, if a team with like the 45th or the 48th pick gives a guaranteed contract, these floodgates could open. Is this a concern now, or will it be a concern August 1st?
I think it's a concern August 1st, Joe. And the Texans have another second-round pick, Minnesota offensive tackle Arianta Hirsery, who they have high hopes for. And there's talk that he could be a starter, not right off the bat, but take over left tackle over new left tackle Cam Robinson, who's on a one-year deal. So that's hurt him in negotiations with him. So how does Nick Caserio, his agent says, well, look, you did it with Jaden Higgins. Why won't you do it with my guy? Why did you do it with him? So, yeah, Nick Caserio's got a lot of people angry at him because it's this kind of deal. For players, they make improvements grudgingly and eventually say all the twos get guaranteed contracts, and then next year is going to be threes that won't guarantee contracts. So, really, it's collusion, and that's a dirty word in the NFL. Mm. For all those second-round picks, none of them get it. Just like Cincinnati. I mean, I don't blame Shamar Stewart, the defensive end, for the clause that they did not put in a Marion Sims contract last year. They're trying to stick him with. I don't blame him for saying, I want that same deal, and they won't give it to him. So he just left during the minicamp and went home to College Station. So it usually, if we get to training camp, say get it, is it like you said, Joe, August 1st, if you got all these second rounders out, it's going to be a huge issue.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW here on the Chase and Big Joe show, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. John McClain on with us, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW.
Take John, break. I know we're in the summer season. A lot of stories out there. Do deep dive in the stories. I was reading one about Pete Carroll and the Raiders and how his infectious attitude and positivity has infected that entire organization. Why does Pete Carroll, John? You know Pete. You've covered him for a long time. He'll turn 74 in September. Why does this work for him? Why is this guy so beloved, especially by former coaches, players, and staff?
I'll tell you a story that a friend of mine who coached with Bill Parcells at New England and coached with Pete when Pete was the head coach. And he was talking about the difference in those two. His difference is night and day, where Bill was so tough on the players. And he said where Pete was younger, Pete was a player's coach, and the discipline that Parcells had installed would last about a season. And then that discipline was going to go by the wayside. And at some point, P Pete Carroll would learn. He'd be a player's coach, and he'd want to hang out and players and listen to loud music while he's doing game plans and things like that. But if he learned how to still have discipline, it'd help him have a good career. And at that point, the jury was out, and he got fired from New England. But obviously, he learned because, you know, he went to two Super Bowls. He won a national championship at USC. And I think Pete is just a very enthusiastic person. He stays in great shape. He bounces all over the place. He mingles with the players, but yet he's learned through the decades how to be tough, how to lay down the law. And sometimes he puts the boundaries up, and if you cross, and those boundaries give you a lot of latitude. Because mm-hmm. you remember the guys he had on the Legion of Boom? You know, he had some characters on there. He had some guys that got in trouble, but they won, and they have great respect for him. And I think he's doing it there. And he is so happy to be a head coach again. You know, they ran him out of Seattle, and he wanted to come back. I didn't know if he'd ever get another job, but I was really happy that he did. In that division, you think of those head coaches in that division, three of them destined for the Hall of Fame for sure. Now, I don't know about Jim Harbaugh, but he's got a lot more to do. But that's maybe the most impressive division when it comes to head coaches there's ever been. And Pete Carroll's right in the mix, about to turn 74 and feels like he's 34.
When you talk
about, that's like he's 34.
Look, he's one of the best, I guess, people that I've met. You know, having worked with Floyd, we're sitting there at the combine, and Pete comes over and he's messing with me. You know, he's never met me before, just like picking at me, and I'm like, this is Pete Carroll. Like, what are we doing here? And was just one of the nicest people, and you can tell he just loves ball.
He does love ball, and that's a great way to put it. And he's that way 24/7. And I'm glad he's back in the league because he's good for the league. And it'd be getting Pete Carroll and Ashton Jenny, who I think is going to be Offensive Rookie of the Year, is a great move for them. And obviously he loves Geno Smith because he brought Geno to Seattle. Pete had final say on all personnel there. John Schneider did not, and now John Schneider does. But and I don't think he has final say in Las Vegas. I'm not sure. But he got the quarterback he wanted. He got the first-round pick he wanted. And I think he's proven enough over his career. He's a pretty shrewd personnel guy.
Speaking of some new coaches, I am really curious about Liam Cohen in Jacksonville and how that's going to work out. I mean, I know he's, you know, a pretty good offensive mind and, you know, comes from a lot of the same trees, but, you know, with Trevor Lawrence, how do you think that relationship is going to work? And can he get the full potential out of Lawrence that everybody's been waiting for?
Well, that's something remains to be seen, but considering his track record with quarterbacks, I would say if anybody's going to, it would be him. And Lawrence has not been worth the first overall pick. He's not been a generational quarterback. It doesn't mean he can't be for the next 10 years. And we see that happen. Sometimes they got to change teams before they realize their potential. Look at Baker Mayfield and what he did, including working with Cohen. So I would say the odds are pretty good that we're going to see a better, maybe not a spectacular, but a better Trevor Lawrence this season in the AFC South.
You know, John, we talk about Will Levis here. You know, what's the gauge for him? Does he stay? Does he go? If you're going to trade for a Will Levis, another team, do you do it before camp, middle camp, before the season starts, right before that week? Because I'm trying to remember the last time. I know we went through the Billy Volek, Vince Young mess here in 2006, and they brought in Kerry Collins, and that was just an odd time. But if you're going to go and pull the trigger on a Will Levis, do you do it before camp starts? Or do you see him go through a couple of joint practices and then say, all right, I want him now?
I think you wait until somebody makes you a decent offer. Now, really, what would you give for Will Levis? A 7? A 6? I think that, and if anybody's going to do it, would it be Liam Cohen?
Yeah.
Because they were together at Kentucky. But I wouldn't give up on Levis yet. I mean, he's not going to be the starter. But what are the odds that Cam Ward's going to start 17 games, a rookie? Not good. And so at some point, they're going to need another quarterback. And Levis, if he played a little bit, like look what happened to Joe Milton last year. I thought the Patriots should have kept him around.
And, that might bite
them. If he gets to play a little more, then you might get a better pick. Thought that was a really good deal by the Cowboys. So you never know. You keep him. If he gets an opportunity, maybe he plays well and the price goes up. Because there's no hurry to move him because you're not going to get squat.
Yeah, that's right. And right now the backup quarterback for the Jags is Nick Mullins. And so if you get somebody in there who knows your system that you're comfortable with, we all assume Jacksonville at some point will pull the trigger on Will Levis just to wait and see. But obviously with the relationship he has with Liam Cohen, that's a nice landing spot. But I'm like you, John. If I know this team's going to release him and I don't have to give anything up, I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what happens.
I think the best thing for them to do, let him play in preseason, see what he does in joint practices, see if he's a different quarterback. And that's not going to be a good measure. The real measure would be if he gets an opportunity to play in a game. There's, because the way Cam Ward runs and moves as much as he does, and the odds are he's going to get hurt at some point, and you hope he's only misses one game. And if Levis were to go in and play like, say, Milton played, all of a sudden people take notice. This guy's turned the corner, and you can get him for a low pick, which might, instead of be a 7, might be a 5, a conditional 4. You just never know. There's no hurry. If they had not been in a hurry, they would have done it already. And they just sit back, relax, and let it play out.
You know, it's funny, John, you get Titans fans all in rage when you ask them and say, what if when they open that season at Denver, if all things considered equal, if Will Levis is a starting quarterback and Cam Ward's not? And Titans fans lose their mind on that. So we'll see what happens that first game in the Mile High City.
I'd be surprised if Cam Ward is not the starter. Every year he's been from high school and college, he's improved. And you don't get better sitting on the bench. Maybe a first game, something, a second, third, but it's only a matter of time. And when you're the first overall pick, the odds are you're going to be starting right away. And they've improved their offensive line. I think Tony Pollard will be better this season than last season. And the key is, as you guys know, who's going to catch the ball. And so I think Ward will be such an exciting player. Rookies tend to look down the field, and when they don't see somebody make a play, they run too much. But he's such a good runner, and he's smart. And you take a guy that's improved every single year since he started playing quarterback in high school, the odds are he's going to do a lot of improving while he's playing for the Titans.
John, I'll say this real quick about Levis. Joe and I were at an event last week. It was the Professional Fighters League that they had here. Levis was sitting right in front of us with his family, and they announced him and some other Titans. J.C. Latham was there, a few others, at Tony Pollard, and they announced Levis, and there were some boos, and he kind of laughed it off. And anybody that came up to him and asked for a picture, he did it. He shook hands. He played the role of the quarterback. He the body language was great. So I'll give him that, I mean, even in this situation, I think he's carried himself well and said the right thing. So he at least has that going for him.
Well, he's being evaluated every day by potential suitors.
Sure.
And things, if he carries himself like that everywhere he goes, that gets back to teams, and that's tremendous for him when it's time to getting a new zip code.
John, thanks so much as always. We'll do it again next week.
Guys, thank you very much. As always, I do appreciate it.
John McClain, presented by Maple Street Biscuits, Wake Up to WOW, joins us every Wednesday at 9:30 here on the program. Coming up next, I have a question for you guys, and it's definitely a summer topic, but a good topic, I think, and I want some participation. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Who is the next Nashville athlete to get a statue? They're building a new Titan Stadium. Could there be some statues out front? I want to discuss. We'll do that next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.